You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is
Mac Lacey. Alex, we are here on this special episode to talk part one of our Attack of the Clones breakdown. This is all in preparation for the Book of Boba Fett coming out in December. We're kind of getting in tune with his childhood by revisiting the second installment of the saga. Nice. I'm so looking forward to this. I have thoughts.
Yes.
We will get to that. But I do also want to point out that I have upgraded my background here.
For those
viewing on YouTube, beige wall and white door was not really working any longer, so yeah. I changed something up. Hope you like it.
Now you're in hyperspace, which is incredible. True. You are in hyperspace.
There we go. Hyperspace.
I did not change my background yet. I'm going to. So if you are still kind of waiting on like, well, when is Alex going to change his background? It's coming soon. I promise. If you're listening on the podcast, you can see Mac in hyperspace by clicking on the YouTube link in your show notes and then subscribing on YouTube, because we are so close to 1,000 subscribers. And I think we can get there before our next breakdown, before part two of Attack of the Clones breakdown. I think we can get to 1,000. So that is a huge way you can help us out, is by subscribing on YouTube if you have not done so yet. We're trying to make a presence in YouTube. And again, if you're primarily a listener just on the podcast, which most of you are, the numbers show that most of you are, you could still help us out by subscribing on YouTube. That would be such a huge, huge help.
Yeah, we're just still trying to find our footing over here, learning the new platform and everything like that. So you could definitely be of support just by going and hitting the bell or whatever we're supposed to say.
Yeah, subscribe, like, hit the bell, notification.
Smash the like button.
Smash, smash, smash.
do a vacuum space mine to the like button.
So, yeah, you definitely can help us out on just subscribing, but you can also help us out on patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch, where you just pay $2 a month and you get extra bonus commentary episodes. We're doing High Republic breakdowns. We also have reviewed The Rise of Skywalker. There's a ton of bonus episodes, even The Adventures of Jay Starstone and Arcanus Rex over there. And by supporting us on Patreon, you can help us like upgrade our equipment, which we are saving up right now for new cameras and lighting, so my face isn't shadowed by wearing this hat. Yeah, so if you want to,
doesn't look like he's in like a hostage video. He looks like he's being held captive in a cave somewhere.
Please help me. I'm going to build an Iron Man suit to get out of here very soon.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well. In the meantime, you know, before you complete that suit, should we talk about Attack of the Clones?
Oh, I cannot wait to talk about Attack of the Clones. So, we're doing an Attack of the Clones breakdown because, like Max said, we are working our way to the Book of Boba Fett. So this is our Boba Fett rewatch. And so we'll be doing some breakdowns of the Clone Wars episodes that he's in as well. And while we're kind of talking about that, I do want to mention there's been a lot of people asking, are we going to cover the Bad Batch? We're specifically going to be talking about live action TV shows and doing those scene by scene breakdowns, unless we're doing something like this where we're kind of like leading up to something. Now, we'll talk about the Bad Batch, of course, if it's going to affect the live action television shows in like a major way. So like, yeah, we know Fennec Shand is going to be in the Bad Batch, but like if she says something like, I'm going to take Grogu somewhere, like that, we got to talk about, like, we got to stop and talk about, okay, wait a second. That's a big deal. And that's not to diminish the animation side at all. Like we've talked about, we had jobs. Yes.
And we had to specify.
Yeah. We had to make a judgment call.
Got to have our boundaries somewhere.
Right.
But yeah.
Right. So some of the animation content is probably my favorite Star Wars content.
And honestly, that's kind of why it's nice that we don't have to feel the pressure to talk about it and everything. We can just sit back and enjoy it, you know, for ourselves. So
if you're looking for two podcasts that do a good job of breaking down and talking about this, the Geeky Bubble podcast, Jonah Marie Macias hosts that. She's a good friend of the podcast. She talks about Star Wars animation. We love her. She's awesome. Another one is Rogue Rebels. Sal Perales and his family talk about all that stuff. So those are two really good podcasts if you're looking for specified breakdowns of that stuff. So
yeah,
with all that said, I say we should jump right into Attack of the Clones.
Let's do it. Let's see the crawl.
Okay. So the director of Attack of the Clones is George Lucas, and writer, get this,
also George Lucas.
And you can tell. So
there was no proof, no editor, proofreader for this script. This is the pure, unadulterated, straight from the mind of George Lucas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love it so much.
It's so good. It's
my least favorite Star Wars movie. And I think it is yours, too.
It's
like,
also
up front.
Mine. But
we
Star
love it.
Wars, and we like it. Yeah, yeah,
we
yeah.
love it.
And,
so,
and it's fun when you know it's like your least favorite. You can also, the stakes are off a little bit for your viewing experience. It's almost a more relaxed watch, you know?
I'm not there with Rise of Skywalker yet. I rewatched that the other day. I'm like, this one still hurts. I can't. Yeah. it's hard to watch that one. But this one's fun to rewatch for sure. So, of course, we get the classic a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away text, followed by the episode 2 crawl. And basically 10 years have passed since the Phantom Menace, and thousands of solar systems want to get out of the Republic. And basically the Republic's like, thanks, but no thanks. The crawl informs us that the separatist movement is under the leadership of the mysterious Count Dooku. And the movie literally goes on to explain that he's a super famous Jedi. So I don't know what's super like mysterious about him.
Maybe just like, why is he now this instead of a Jedi? Maybe that's the mystery.
Yeah. But like he left being a Jedi to become like Count of Sereno, like his home planet.
Right.
And if you have not read Dooku Jedi Lost by Kevin Scott or listened to the audio thing, but there's a script version too that I enjoy much better just reading. It's incredible. It's just incredible. You should definitely check that out. So basically, the premise of this movie is the Jedi can't keep up with all the problems. There's not enough of them. So Padme Amidala, who is now a senator, is coming to vote on whether or not the Republic should start an army, because at this time they don't have like a galactic army. It's just more, hey, something's going on. These local armies will handle it. Yeah. They're thinking now we need a galactic army. We need something to handle this threat.
I feel like that's like the beginning. That's the slippery slope.
Yeah.
Like that's really the beginning of the Empire, right?
Yeah. And like part of me is like, do you really need an army if people just want to get out of the Republic? Like to me, it's like that seems super aggressive. Like unless the separatist movement is like, and I guess we do get the sense in just a second, they are doing like terrorist attack type things. So it doesn't really make that clear though in the crawl that the separatist movement is like an aggressive,
right.
Hey, we are going to attack you thing.
Yeah, there's no like moral judgment assigned to any of that. It's just like, here's the information. And you're like, that seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe an overstep, but yeah.
Definitely. And so typically the camera tilts down after a crawl, but this time the camera tilts up towards the busy center of the galaxy, Coruscant. And two Naboo starfighters escort Padme's chrome World War II bomber wing, which is just really cool.
It's awesome. Like, I like it when you can really see the influences of Star Wars in Star Wars, you know?
Yeah.
Just like in beginning of The Last Jedi, all the World War II type, you know, dogfighting stuff there. And you know, because the original, so inspired by that stuff. So it's fun when you can kind of see it on display in like a really obvious way.
Yeah, it's so cool. So inside the ship, old George is tricking us. And so we see someone from behind who we're meant to think is Padme and two Naboo security guards let fake Padme, or Fadme, if you will, know that they're almost a Coruscant. And then magically she answers in Natalie Portman's voice, which is just
uncanny.
Very good on this handmaiden.
Yeah. She's skilled. She's a great impersonator.
So, okay. Also, can we talk about these helmets real quick? So, like, the Naboo security guards, this look is much, much classier than the original Rebel Troopers that we see in A New Hope. It's like basically the same style of helmet, very clean look. But these guys, like, it's got leather on it. It's like nicer looking.
Yeah. And they're like dressed to the nines too. They're not in like, you know, the like.
Yeah. Here's a vest.
Right.
Our uniform is a vest, like a jumpsuit and a vest.
Right. Yeah. You're just Han Solo with a half of an Easter egg on your head.
Okay. So like, are soldiers constantly being shot in the back of the neck in the Star Wars galaxy?
That's the most vulnerable. What a testament to the fighting force that wears a helmet that only protects the back of the neck.
I mean, I've got questions about the design of the helmet for sure.
Yeah.
Like outside world, I know it's just like, hey, that's a different looking thing than what we have. But like, really, it just seems to protect your neck.
So they're safe from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Right. Okay. So the ship and its escorts glide through Coruscant's clouds and come to a landing platform. And we hear R2-D2 tweet as the pilot of the starfighter comes out of their cockpit. And a second pilot approaches the first and takes off his helmet and reveals a sweet eye patch. And this is Captain Typho. And I'm not going to lie, 12-year-old me wasn't fooled by Captain Typho.
Nope, you're like,
that's not Panaka.
No, where's the other guy?
Yeah, I love Captain Panaka. And it's going to take more than a sweet eye patch just to casually replace Panaka, okay?
Yeah. It's almost as bad as like Rachel Dawes in going from Batman Begins to Dark Knight.
Well, to Star Wars credit, this is a different character. Right. Yeah. But it's, basically, I mean,
it's the same
role.
Character, but.
So, okay. I don't know if this is actually technically canon, but in the, I guess, the Legends, Panaka went on to become a Moth.
Yeah.
In the Empire, which is like super like, oh, come on, man. Man, I liked you.
Yeah. He did. I mean, he does fire entirely too many blaster bolts into that window.
So it makes sense.
It's been pointed out to me recently, and it's hilarious to watch.
Just took one, buddy. And you just like go out. You unload the clip
on this window.
Not much action on Naboo. So when you get the opportunity, you got to take it. So Typho declares, "We made it. Guess I was wrong. There was no danger at all." And immediately after saying it, the cruiser explodes.
Just immediately.
Like, he's still saying it, and it blows up.
Yeah. Like, as a exclamation point on the big, and on the end of that sentence is the explosion.
Just incredible. Debris goes everywhere. Everyone is dead. Padme rushes to her body double, Corday, and Corday says she is sorry and that she's failed Padme, and then she just dies right there.
Yeah.
Typho, I'm not going to say. Typho pulls her away from Corday, and Typho gives her a little pep talk to get off the platform because Padme's like just in shock. And then we swipe over to see Palpatine's office, and he's meeting with the Jedi Order, and they are talking about the upcoming vote. And then Palpatine says something very interesting here. He says, "I will not let this Republic that has stood for 1,000 years be split in two." So even back then, it was a direct shot to the Legends material.
Yeah,
I would say we have evidence in the Clone Wars cartoon that there was at least an old Republic that was separate from the Republic that is operating now, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because in the cartoon, the Clone Wars, Pre Vizsla says, right? He says the fall of the old Republic.
Right.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, there's a confirmed entity that is the Old Republic, and it can't be
this Republic.
This, yeah.
Which is part of the High Republic era. The High Republic era has kind of died down. It's like the height of the Republic is called the High Republic era. That's why they call it that. It's like the best it's ever going to be. And then after that, it's all downhill. And right. So we're in the downhill right now.
Yeah. We're in the Low Republic.
Low Republic. Yeah. Definitely. So Mace Windu lets Palpatine know that if things get hot, there aren't enough Jedi to fight this war. And they're really driving that point home in this movie, that there's not enough Jedi. And I think it's to like also point out like, hey, Darth Vader and Palpatine didn't kill all the Jedi. There just wasn't a lot to begin with. And then the Clone Wars really took care of a lot of them. And right. Then they just kind of cleaned up after that.
Yeah, just really kind of emphasizing that decline.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what the prequels really are about, you know?
Right.
It's just all about the decline of
everything.
Everyone who's supposed to be a moral authority, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And, like, again, the High Republic, you want to see lots of Jedi? Check that stuff out. It's pretty cool. So they're interrupted by a group of senators entering, led by Padme, and Yoda greets her so cordially, so respectfully, and Padme just completely ignores that, and she wants to know who tried killing her. Like, she doesn't even, like, acknowledge Yoda. She's just like, hey, who's trying to kill me?
Right.
Which I guess, you know, in the same circumstance.
I understand her priorities.
If someone's trying to kill me, I would like to
That's
know.
That's probably top of my mind.
Who's trying to kill me?
Yeah.
So Padme immediately accuses Count Dooku without any evidence, and the Jedi brush it off. They say, impossible. He was a Jedi once. He cannot do that. It's like impossible because he was once a Jedi, which that's flaw, obviously, in their thinking.
Right. It's arrogance.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, we're so great. Like, no one can fall like from this high, you know?
And that's exactly what Luke Skywalker talks about in The Last Jedi, right?
Right.
Like, their hubris is like so high of like, we got this. We're fine. We're Jedi, you know?
Right.
So Palpatine, doing his string pulling, suggests that Padme be put under the protection of the Jedi and Bail Organa, Leia's future adoptive father, which I hope we see in Cassian Andor, by the way.
Jimmy Schmitz.
Come on. Wearing clothes out of Shakespeare play. He's got that weird collar thing.
Yep.
He thinks it's a little overkill, too.
Nabooans really do it up in the Nabooans.
He's from Alderaan.
Alderaan, yeah.
Really, stylistically, they're pretty much the same.
They're both Earth.
One's Italy. Parallels. The other is like nice mountain range somewhere. European mountain range somewhere.
The Alps. Yeah.
The Alps. Yeah. For sure. So Palpatine's like, oh, I know you can be protected by your old friend Obi-Wan Kenobi and his hot young Padawan that is clearly obsessed with you. I've got a great idea. I think we can all win here. And so my question is, did nobody think this through? They're just all like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, okay. So Anakin is what age? Like, you know.
Yeah, he's 19, right?
Yeah.
He was 9 in The Phantom Menace, so that makes him 19 in Attack of the Clones, which I still think is a little young. That puts Darth Vader very young when he dies.
Right.
Almost 50, not even 50, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. But I'm just like, Obi-Wan, you were that age. Like, you should be able to relate. You should be able to object, right? Like,
well, obviously, with what we know from the Clone Wars, him and Satine.
That's, yeah, right.
I mean, and like, if
nobody
anybody, Obi-Wan.
This.
Yeah, they're just like, this is a great scenario. Let's put my hothead Padawan, who cannot stop talking about Padme, who he has not seen in 10 years, with her. This is a great idea in a high-pressure situation.
Yeah. Because that never, like, brings anyone together. Trauma? No one's ever gotten together over that.
Oh, so we cut to an elevator revealing an older Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi with quite possibly the worst haircut I've ever seen.
Oh, come on now. Let's have some respect for the Jedi mullet, all right?
Listen, I would dig the long hair. If he's going for a Qui-Gon thing, I'm all for it. But the way it curls at the bottom, he looks like a villain from Game of Thrones.
He looks like he has an achy breaky heart. Is what he looks like.
He looks like some minor house that they thought their like house was way more important than they actually were. Like Walder Frey's son, like one of the millions of Walder Frey's son. That's what he looks like.
Yeah,
it's just not a good look. Like the long hair, like it needs to be longer, I think, if he's going for that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it. You know, Jedi Jesus, the Jedi mullet. I'm a fan. I like the hair in
it. It's not even really a mullet. It's just like
it's you know, he's got it slicked back, so it looks short on top.
That's true. But I don't know. It looks better in the rain on Kamino. I'll say that much.
Very true. Very true.
It looks better that way. So Obi-Wan mentions that Anakin seems a little tense, and Anakin just admits that he's super nervous to see Padme. And in hindsight, like we said, he probably should have stopped the elevator and talked that whole situation through, right? Like, wait a second. Why are you nervous to see her?
It's like,
what's
up? Is there anything underlying that statement? Like, what's going on?
Instead, Obi-Wan goes,
all right.
He doesn't care. Yeah. So the elevator arrives and they are greeted by Jar Jar Binks, and Padme comes to greet them. And then Anakin decides to do his thing right there in front of God and everybody. He is going to make his move right now.
Shooting his shot.
100%. This is the moment he's been dreaming about for 10 years. It's right here.
Like, present company included.
Doesn't matter. He's going to do it right now. He's waited 10 years for this moment, and immediately she friend zones him. Just without hesitation.
Anakin is so creepy in this movie. He's so creepy.
He really is.
It's rough, man. I like, no joke, watching some of the scenes between him and Padme, I'm like, I cringe a little bit.
Do you think that's intentional? Do you think it's intentional creepy, or like, what's the deal there?
I don't know. It's certainly not helped by the direction and the performance, right?
I feel like it's a little more on George than it is on Hayden.
I mean, I think most every performance issue. I mean, Natalie Portman is an incredible actor, and then like
says Ewan McGregor.
And this is what we get. You know, there's a common denominator there.
and George Lucas is not like an actor's director. He is all about the visual. Like he's telling a tone poem.
Yeah, he created Star Wars. Yeah. That's what he does. He's a visionary, like you know. Yeah. But when it gets down to some of the finer details of the mechanics, you know, there's some issues sometimes. But.
And I think if they were in the Mandalorian like dome thing, right, it'd be a little bit easier to act than just literally they're in front of blue screens all the time if you watch the behind the scenes stuff.
And they're interacting with like maybe one other person,
yeah,
like who's in costume, and then it's just, you know,
that would be tough.
Sea of green or blue, yeah. It's you gotta have a good imagination, man. Like,
I just went on Hayden because I think he really shines in episode 3, and so like he shows off kind of his acting chops in that one, I think, but. Like we said, without hesitation, Padme friend zones him. And I think Padme's instincts here are correct. I think her gut is saying, stay away from this person. He's creepy. You don't want any part of this. And I think she's right to think that immediately.
I mean, definitely in the long run, you know?
Yeah. So, like in retrospect, I probably would have portrayed Anakin a little more like Kylo Ren in the sense of, I don't really know why Kylo Ren is so angry. That's not really ever explained. I mean, I guess it is in The Last Jedi, but still, like, there's a sense of, like, he's just really mad about something, and I'm not really sure why, but I believe him.
Right. Generally angsty.
a lot of that's Adam Driver, though. Right. And he's an incredible actor. So
yeah. And like, so. I like Hayden Christensen. He's no Adam Driver, though.
No. No, he's not. So they all go sit down to discuss what's going on. And Padme mentions she really wants to find out who's trying to kill her, obviously. But Obi-Wan reminds her that they're only there to protect her. And Anakin just keeps arguing with Obi-Wan, questioning everything. And so this is really your first indication of the future rift between the two. And it's like awkward for everyone. Like, it's awkward watching. It's awkward for everybody in the room. Even Jar Jar like gulps. He's like, you know, like, he just, it's awkward. And I do think that scene's really good, because it's like, okay, I'm seeing a little Vader already kind of in you coming out, in the sense of, you've got a lot of questions. You're kind of angry and questioning everything. I do like that.
Yeah. And there's just like there's an unrest kind of boiling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so as Padme leaves after that discussion, we get another indication that Anakin might just be a psychopath. I mean, he just starts spilling his guts to Jar Jar, who he has not also seen for 10 years. He just tells him everything that's on his mind right there and then.
Right. And I'm like, Jar Jar is not who I would choose as a confidant. Like,
no.
Both for the confidence aspect, also like, are you going to take advice after you vent? Like, what? Like, what are you?
Imagine seeing someone after 10 years who you didn't, like, you knew for a day. You knew this person for like a day 10 years ago, and you just start telling them everything about, like, man, I've been thinking about that girl right there every day 10 years of my life, and she doesn't even remember me. Yeah, because she's normal.
Right. Yeah. No. It's so creepy, Alex.
I know.
It's real creepy, man. It's just a weird setup.
But I love it. Obi-Wan confirms that Padme was happy to see them. And so, like, I do like Obi-Wan. Obviously, he has way more of a personality in this than he does episode one. And that, like, he is trying to, like, it's almost like he is kind of okay with Anakin having a crush on her. And he's like, hey, she was happy to see us. Calm down. We're all good.
Right.
It's kind of a weird dynamic there.
It could be that he's also remembering being in this situation, kind of. And how that felt. And, like, he did come out the other side, you know, the way he was supposed to, according to the Jedi, you know?
Right.
Not that I think that's reasonable, but...
Right.
But so, like, I think he's like, yeah, maybe he'll have this. And, like, just like I have kind of some, you know, treasured memories from this time. But, like, ultimately no harm came from it. So, like, I'll just let him kind of sow his wild oats for a second. But as long as I guide him through, he'll turn out all right.
Do you think the Jedi have, like, one of those rules like the Amish do, where you have, like, a year to go do whatever you want to?
Yeah, just to, like, get it out of your system or whatever, and then, I don't know.
They should think about it.
That would be a great new live-action television series.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the Spring Break Jedi Council edition. Like...
It'd be like one of those shit like The Hills or, you know, the OC type thing. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Coruscant Nights. that would be good. Yeah,
90210, but whatever Coruscant's zip code is.
Ooh, that works. Would be good. So we cut to nighttime, and bounty hunter Zam Wessel exit a speeder parked next to some glowing billboards, and out of the shadows emerges our dude, Jango Fett.
The original Silver Mandalorian, you know?
That's right.
That's where Din got it.
That's right. So she lets him know that blowing up the ship did not work. So we're confirmed it was Zam that did that.
Yep.
And so Jango hands her a vial of two very nasty looking centipede like alien stuff.
Yeah, they're gross.
I hate them.
Why do you think that Jango is outsourcing like this?
I think it's a little too hot for him, in the sense of, like, this is killing a senator. Listen, I have done some things as a bounty hunter, but this is a very cute senator. I don't want that kind of heat. You know what I mean? It's almost like, I'm going to give this to my buddy Zam. And then, like, if she fails, I'll find someone else. So it's almost like he's going to get the job done through someone else. Kind of, it's just another layer, confusing layer of this movie, where it's like, who's the man behind the curtain? There's four of them.
But then also none of them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of them we'd literally never see until the animated series.
Right.
Sifo Dyas, mm-hmm. which might be the most confusing thing about this movie.
Yeah.
So anyway. Just
confusing from a choice standpoint, not a, you know, much less a narrative standpoint.
It's confusing in all aspects. Yeah, 100%.
One cannot wrap the mind around it.
Yeah. Kevin Scott attempted to in Jedi Lost. Still don't really fully understand it, but
yeah,
that is what it is.
It was fun, though.
It was fun. We cut back to Padme's apartment where Anakin and Obi-Wan meet back up to talk through the security of the building, and Obi-Wan quickly finds out that they're trying to bait the assassin to do something to her while the Jedi are there. And, like, Padme's super brave. She just straight up goes to sleep, even though that's the case. Like, that's what they planned. I would not be able to sleep.
Here's, and she, like, she spent the whole day trying to find out who killed her or was trying to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd think she would still be kind of up worrying about that, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, for sure. Nope. She is asleep for sure. But R2's in there, so I guess they're good. So we then see Zam insert a vial into an assassin droid, which is another layer. Mm-hmm. So it's like triple layered here.
Yep.
And then back at the apartment, Anakin shares that he hasn't been sleeping well lately because of dreams of his mother. So in retrospect, I feel like they should have put more emphasis on Anakin having visions because it's basically the catalyst for him turning to the dark side.
Right.
Like, that should have been a bigger deal in this movie, and it's a bigger deal in the next one, but put so much emphasis on this in the sense of, hey, wait a second. The Chosen One is having dreams of the future. We should talk about this.
Right. Like, put at least as much attention on that as, like, the sequels do on, like, Kylo and Rey's Force.
Yes!
Thing. Like make it that much of a centerpiece, you know?
Yeah, because then it's like, I feel like then you would really get inside the head of Anakin of like, oh, this is, it makes sense of what he's doing. He is trying to prevent it. But what, like, the kind of the tragedy of this is every time he tries to prevent a vision of the future, he's actually causing it. So, like, right. The action to take would to be do nothing.
Right.
But that's not his personality.
Because he's got to got to charge in and fix it.
He's got to control it.
I got to go save everybody. Yeah. It's got to be me. You know?
Yep. Yep. So. And that's the tragedy. I just kind of wish they would have focused on that a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
So then somehow they start arguing about politics because it always comes back to politics.
Politics in Star Wars can be so cool.
Yes.
When it is, but when it's not, it's not.
Yeah. Basically Obi-Wan saying like, hey, never trust a politician ever, even if she's cute, like that girl in there that you have a major crush on, which again, I think now in retrospect, now that we know the thing with him and Satine, he's speaking from experience. Something happened there.
Yeah. Maybe he got burned. Maybe that's the underlying cause of, or you know, what's the emotional foundation of this whole scenario.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan got burned, you know?
Yeah. And I need that story, by the way. I need that story.
When were we? Yeah.
Young Obi-Wan and Satine on Mandalore for a whole year.
Right. At least a novel. That's at least a novel.
At least three novels.
the Obi-Wan and Satine trilogy.
Yes. I will write it. I will write that right now. I'm starting now. So.
That's Alex's fan fiction.
On the Patreon, $2. So while they're arguing politics, the assassin droid inserts the two killer insects into Padme's room, and Anakin senses it just in time to cut both in half, and Obi-Wan with zero hesitation, jumps through a window to catch the assassin droid. Just incredible.
Like, big, like, Labrador retriever energy.
He had to be drinking that night.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to. We'll get to that.
Out of his mind, just a droid.
And he just holds on for dear life through the traffic of Coruscant. So I really like this scene because we get a great look at Coruscant, and then Anakin finds a bright yellow speeder to chase his master, and Obi-Wan is nearly missing all sorts of speeders while Zam watches from her perch, and she pulls out a long rifle, and I get the Fennec Shand vibes right away.
Yes, this is the blueprint.
Yes.
And like I really do think that Boba would have like modeled his partnership with Fennec off of like this, you know,
like she reminds me of Zam, because I'm sure Zam was around Boba.
Right.
That's just so cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was ever a connection between Fennec and Zam.
That would, I don't know. Cool. That'd be a cool thing to explore. Like it's like a whole bounty hunter lineage, you know?
Yeah. So she shoots away the droid and Obi-Wan falls through the busy traffic while Zam gets away. And thankfully, Anakin catches Obi-Wan. And I do think the dialogue and scenes of them driving the speeder are poorly directed. This might be like my least favorite part of the movie in the sense of their banter back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just poorly directed because Anakin is like almost completely laying down the speed. Like he is literally like... He's driving like this the whole time. So watch on the podcast, on the YouTube.
Everyone listening should tune into the YouTube just at this section right here, just for this, because the visual.
Literally the entire time he's like that. Why Obi-Wan is saying straight up. I don't know why Anakin is laying down. That's just poor directing, I think. Though I will say the good thing about this scene is we're starting to see Obi-Wan with more of a personality in this scene. He's a little more Alec Guinness, right?
Yes. Got a little more of that twinkle behind the eyes, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, he was basically a blank slate in The Phantom Menace. Like Obi-Wan had no personality. He was actually just kind of a jerk.
Yeah, generally.
I mean, like... He says something about Anakin being a pathetic life form, like when before he meets him in The Phantom Menace. Like he's just kind of a jerk. Now he's more of a sassy jerk, but he's lovable because of the sassiness.
Yeah, for sure.
And so after more of the chase, Zam thinks she's got away, and so does Obi-Wan, and Anakin knows what he's doing though, and then jumps out of the speeder down towards Zam's oncoming ship. And he just grabs on in time and tries to get him, and she tries to get him off of it. And Anakin then ignites his lightsaber into the cockpit, trying to stop her, but he loses it. And Obi-Wan thankfully catches it behind, and Zam accidentally shoots her own controls and forces them to crash onto the Coruscant street. It's a layer of Coruscant, so it's not really the bottom. Now, I did love this scene growing up. I would like pause this all the time just to look at all the people in like the background and try to find the coolest one to write a fan fiction about.
Yeah. I like that. So this scene right here is what earned me just the biggest like bump I've ever had on my head from an injury. I think I might have told this story.
I think it's on the Patreon.
Yeah. Well, real quick. I was reenacting this scene. I was Obi-Wan and my neighbor was Anakin, and we were standing on a stump, which was the speeder, and it came time for him to jump off, and there was a piece of rebar sticking out of the stump, and when he jumped off, he bent the rebar back and then just let go, and it smacked me right in the forehead, and it was blue. Like the bump had like a blue spot in the middle. So that probably explains a lot of my adult life.
That was a very Anakin thing of your friend to do.
It was.
You guys had your roles very...
We're typecast, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you are a very Obi-Wan.
I don't know about all that.
No, you are.
I don't know about that.
let us know on Twitter at COT Watch or on Instagram at
is
COT
Alex
Watch.
Anakin and I'm Obi-Wan, or am I Anakin and Alex is Obi-Wan? Let us know.
That is actually a good question. I don't know.
I feel like you're Obi-Wan and I'm Anakin.
You're creepy, that's for sure.
Whoa!
No, I'm just kidding.
Got him.
I'm just kidding. So, no, you're more Django if you're anybody in this movie. Just because it's Mandalorian.
Well, that's also who I always liked to play as a kid. It's Django.
You would. Zam races through the streets and Anakin pursues her. And as Obi-Wan watches from above, he lands the speeder to intercept Anakin as Zam rushes into a nightclub. And so this nightclub is called the Outlanders Club.
Mm-hmm.
Where else have we heard that name before?
The Outlander? The Outlanders Club? The whole thing?
Just the Outlander.
Isn't that Dash Rendar's ship?
This Dash Rendar ship. Nice. That's right. So do you think he started a nightclub? I do, in my headcanon. He started a nightclub.
I mean, well, that would be...
No, it's his dad. His dad started the nightclub.
It'd be like his grandfather, right?
No, it would be his dad. He's about the same age as Han, because he's literally Han with shoulder pads.
He's just the same character, but drawn by Rob Liefeld. Yeah.
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 The inspiration for Toro Calican, I might add.
For sure.
Love that guy. So anyways, they're in the Outlanders Club, and before Anakin can actually run inside to chase her, Obi-Wan stops him, and after cautioning patience, Obi-Wan hands Anakin his lightsaber. And I'm not really a fan that this isn't the same lightsaber for Luke. Like, the fact that he breaks this lightsaber later bothers me, because it's not like, it's just, I don't know, this lightsaber's a little less special now. You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, this saber was only used to kill children. And then it's like, hey, your dad wanted you to have this.
It has the blood of many innocents.
Wait a second.
On the hilt.
So obviously Obi-Wan was lying about that in A New Hope. But what if they fix that line, which something they would do, this is very Star Wars of them. They, fix that to make it true from the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. Like, what if Darth Vader and Obi-Wan have a conversation and he's like, hey, I wanted my son to have that lightsaber and you took it from me. And now my son's dead because of you. And then they fight.
Yeah. But like, this is like as Force ghosts.
No, they're Obi-Wan and Vader are going to fight in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They Kathleen Kennedy said the rematch of the century. They will fight. Which I know you hate that, but it's going to happen.
I had kind of repressed that from my mind, honestly, that was coming up. Yeah. Yep. I'm very excited for the show. Hope it's awesome.
You don't like that aspect of it, though.
I don't know. I just
you gotta
it's
see
a
it.
Question mark. I gotta see it.
You gotta
I'm
see
not
it.
Gonna I'm, yeah. But I'm excited. Yes.
So Obi-Wan says, this weapon is your life. Kind of a weird statement from a Jedi. Right?
Yeah, because I feel like they're, like, so much... To me, like, Yoda would never say that. He makes such a point of being like, Jedi
the Force
are not,
is your
like,
life.
Yeah, Jedi are not warriors. It's not like, you know, a lightsaber is not important. Like, our connection to the Force is, like, where our strength comes from, you know? Right. To me, it always just, I was a Boy Scout, and so it always just sounded like the be prepared thing. Like, it automatically translates to be prepared when I hear it.
You sure now, Obi-Wan, in this scenario?
I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Okay. Maybe. We'll see. Listeners, let us know.
So then Obi-Wan says, why do I get the feeling that you will be the death of me? It's because he is.
He is.
This is foreshadowing, guys.
It's because the movie already came out.
Star Wars.
And
A New Hope.
Yeah.
Vader kills Obi-Wan. That happens.
Prequel.
Right. Yes. 12-year-old me is like, oh my gosh, he does kill him. He is the death of him.
But you like don't realize it until you see A New Hope again. And then you're like,
right. He's like, wait a second.
Right.
So Anakin asks him not to say that, and that he's the closest thing he has to a father, which isn't true. Obi-Wan is more like an older brother that's forced to take care of his little brother. But Anakin wouldn't know that because he's never had a dad.
Or a brother.
Or a brother. he had a stepbrother, which he didn't know about in this movie. This is kind of like almost like a rewatch for our Obi-Wan Kenobi show too, right?
I feel
this
like
this worked both ways.
Yeah, it does. We're just gearing up for a lot coming out, you know. We're just excited. We're getting a jump on it.
We even get the seeds of the rebellion in this this movie for Andor.
Yeah.
And since I was 6 years old.
Well, the inklings of the Death Star shows up for the first time in this movie too, the plans.
Rogue One.
So look at that, man. It's almost like it's like poetry. It rhymes.
It rhymes.
You know?
I've never heard that stated before, but once you say it like that, it's true.
I mean, it makes sense, right?
You're brilliant.
I know.
Anakin and Obi-Wan stop to survey the club, and on the screens we see some different sports. We see a pod race. Shout out to episode one. Then literally droids playing football. Which is incredible. And then what looks like a Gizga race, which are those little things that get on the Ebon Hawk and KOTOR that are almost impossible to get rid of unless you poison them.
Well, until you fly to their home planet and they just get off. You just got to wait.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
That's what I always do.
I poison them.
Whoa. Maybe it's are Anakin.
It was the dark side thing that I always did.
Yeah.
I didn't like them there.
Because that feels like a very, like, Anakin, like, dipping his toes into the dark side thing to do, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Hmm. So Anakin informs Obi-Wan that the person they're pursuing is a changeling. Then Obi-Wan begins to walk off when Anakin asks where he's going. He says, for a drink. And we get our first indication that Obi-Wan really likes to drink.
Yeah. Because, like, doesn't Anakin, like, take a sip and, like, make a face, and then Obi-Wan's just like...
Well, that's in the Clone Wars. Anakin doesn't drink in this one. He's underage. He's 19.
Yeah, yeah. No. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to bring it all together.
So, listen, Obi-Wan ages because of his alcoholism.
That's gotta be it.
No, it's not. It's going to be like some force thing that happens in Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Gets his
we know it.
Force taken from him.
We know. It.
And then it's CGI Alec Guinness.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then, like, when he talks to Qui-Gon, which that's going to happen. It's got
to
happen.
Liam Neeson has been to the volume by now.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. By the way, we did get a Patreon message from someone today saying that the actress who plays Peli Motto was recently on a podcast and saying she just, like, after recording that pod or before recording that podcast, she had just come from the set of The Mandalorian.
Ooh.
So
we are in production.
We're on.
Season three.
We're on.
Nice.
So when Obi-Wan gets to the bar, beside him is a character named Elon Sleazebag Gano.
The name.
And he asks Obi-Wan if he wants to buy some Death Sticks. And let's pause here for a second. Because Elon is destined to fail at life. His last name is literally Sleazebag.
Sleazebag Gano. Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. I feel like his parents are to blame.
His parents failed him.
They didn't change their own names or change his when he was born.
Like, we're sleazebags. That's what we do. We sell Death Sticks. And guess what? Death Sticks come from his planet that he's from. I researched this. So let's talk a little bit about the Death Stick epidemic that's happening.
Oh, is this our PSA?
It's a crisis. Yeah. A death stick is a, so this is literally the Wikipedia thing. A death stick is a highly addictive illicit substance readily found in the underworld of Coruscant and other locales across the galaxy, delivered inside luminescent sticks. I'm sorry. They were a favorite among desperate addicts and thrill seekers. Death Sticks were created from distilled and refined Extil Salona, made from the Balo mushrooms found on the planet Balasar, which is where Elon is from.
Okay. I'm confused. Just like, what type of a drug do we think? This is a stimulant, it seems like, right?
Okay, now this is legends material. And this is, I mean, it, I like the bold approach to this, but sometimes I think about it and laugh. Luke Skywalker's like great great grandson is a guy named Cade Skywalker. He's the lead singer for Nickelback.
Yeah.
He looks exactly like him, and he's a death stick addict. And when he takes it, it's like he's high as a kite, but not like marijuana, but like crack cocaine.
A stimulant, right?
I don't know drugs. I'm sorry.
Okay. So that makes sense. And Elon, like, do you think that Elon, as someone from that planet, is affected the same way? Like, do you think this is just like their snack or whatever that just happens to like make humans like wild? Or?
No, yeah, he's affected. The audio description called him a junkie.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So he is, yeah. He is afflicted.
He is afflicted, gotcha. And I feel bad for him because like the guy. From the get-go, from the moment he was born,
yeah,
the cards were stacked against him because of his last name.
Right.
His last name's Sleaze Bagano.
It's bad. It's bad.
I, for one, I'm really happy Obi-Wan did what he did to change this man's entire life path with a Jedi mind trick where he's going to go home and rethink his life.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I feel like that's a good way to do a Jedi mind trick, too, because he's not telling him to do any specific thing. He's just like, except for reflect and then and then act accordingly.
Think about what led you to this moment.
Right.
You're openly trying to get me to buy a death stick. And it's clear I'm a Jedi. Like, it's clear I'm a Jedi.
Yeah.
Man, I feel bad for Elon. I want his story. I hope he made it into the rebellion as like someone who's really cleaned up his act. Maybe he's like undercover guy for the rebellion. That would be cool. Yeah. That would be cool.
For real talk though, anybody out there like struggling with any kind of substance abuse issues or anything? Like there's help out there. Yeah. Yeah. We support you. It's all good.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So elsewhere we see Zam quietly going through the club with her hand on her blaster. We also see Anakin looking for her in Ahmed Best, and Anthony Daniels are in this scene, by the way, not playing the characters that they normally do. So Ahmed Best is Jar Jar Binks. Anthony Daniels is C-3PO. It's cool that they're in there.
Yeah.
So Zam draws her blaster, and we're meant to think that she's about to shoot Anakin, and Uncle George pulls a fast one on us again. Obi-Wan turns and slashes Zam's hand off. And how many times do you think he's done that at a bar?
Like, we knew A New Hope was not the first time. This also does not appear to be the first time.
It's like his trick.
It's a signature of Obi-Wan's.
I'm going to go to the bar, get a drink. They'll come to me. I'll cut their hand off.
Someone's hand's going to hit the floor. Yeah.
It'll be bloody or not. We'll see.
Or not. It just depends. And then, you know, someone somewhere will have to write in a book, an article about how this species' blood doesn't cauterize.
That's exactly right. So everyone stops to see what's going on, and all Anakin has to say is that it's Jedi business, and everyone just shrugs and goes on with their life. Like, nobody's, like, fazed by it at all. They're just like, yeah, okay.
It's like, all right.
Yeah. She just lost her hand. So
it's Tuesday.
They carry Zam out into the alleyway, and Obi-Wan immediately questions her, trying to pull out any information. And then Anakin gets really aggressive with her, yelling at her. And then right when she's about to reveal who hired her, she's hit with a Kamino saber dart straight to the neck. And they look back to see Jango Fett jet off a nearby rooftop as her face changes reptilian and she dies.
Yep. I was always like, that was always a part that I was like morbidly fascinated by as a kid.
The way her face changes.
Yeah. It like scared me a little bit, but I was also like, but I want to see it. I'm going to watch it, you know?
Yeah, that is, it was pretty cool. But I do now, I do think now's a good time to say that Children of the Watch is brought to you by Camino Saber Darts. Camino Saber Darts knows how important rest is for your enemies. That's why they are the number one choice for Galactic Assassins and Bounty Hunters from the core all the way to Sub-Terrell. Worried about your privacy? Not even analysis droids can detect these Saber Darts. Camino Saber Darts have been thoughtfully designed, to give your enemies a comfortable rest as they lay their weary heads down from a hard day's work. And to make your life easier, it's what it's done for me, and it's done it for you too, Mac, right? Like, we use these products all the time.
Yeah, just in my daily carry, I don't leave home without a couple in my pocket. You know, you never know. It's just, and look, I'll tell you what, you want to have them and not need them, rather than, you know, need them and not have them. So
Camino Saber Darts are simply incredible, right, Mac?
Absolutely.
Camino Saber Darts make it easy for their customers to know that they're not only getting a great product, but they're helping the environment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Order today, you get 15% off your order of Camino Saber Darts.
It was just Earth Day, you know? let's represent
it's Camino
our place
Day
in the galaxy. Yeah.
Yeah. Just go to the HoloNet page for Camino/Saber Darts. That's HoloNet page for Camino/Saber Darts for 15% off your first order for a limited time. Keep in mind, you also get 100 days of risk-free trial and free shipping and returns. Camino/Saber Darts. Back to the episode. Obi-Wan pulls out the dart, and we switch to a we switch to a scene of the Jedi Council questioning the events that transpired, and the council says that Obi-Wan will investigate this assassination plot and Anakin will continue to protect the person he's obsessed with. And so Anakin isn't sure he can convince her to leave, and then Mace sends Anakin to the very at the very least questionable mentor figure for Anakin, right? Like, to ask for his help. So basically they're going to send Anakin to Palpatine, which should be kind of a red flag anyway, right? Like,
anyway,
why is Palpatine so invested in the guy that we're calling the Chosen One?
Right. Why has he got time for this Jedi Padawan?
Like, he doesn't have time for us.
Right.
He's got time for Anakin, though. Is anyone going to question that?
No.
Okay.
Not this movie.
They start questioning it literally right before they're all murdered. They're like, wait a second.
Yeah, seconds before.
He's a Sith Lord, guys.
And then
they die like that.
Yeah.
So we switch to Palpatine and Anakin speaking in his chambers. And I really do like this scene. And I think Ian McDiarmid really carries this scene in the sense of it's very Vader and Palpatine. Like, this feels like Return of the Jedi.
Right. Yeah, it's that all the crazy twisted dynamics of that relationship, you know, you start even seeing inklings of it here, you know, just the manipulation and the domination, you know.
I do think that Lucas nails that part of the prequels, right? Like, the subtle seduction of Anakin to the dark side by Palpatine.
Yeah.
Very good.
Maybe the internal motivations are not quite as well established, but the external ones, they're right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we switch to another scene in the Jedi Temple where Obi-Wan is trying to convince the council that what they're doing is a bad idea. Like, Obi-Wan is trying to think through this, and he's like, I don't know about this, guys. Anakin's kind of young. He seems kind of obsessed with Padme. And Yoda's on a floating chair, by the way. Reminded me of Grogu. Miss you, Grogu.
Yeah.
And, like, is Grogu at the temple at this point? Or very soon, at least, right?
At least very soon, yeah.
Grogu's just in the next scene. He's off somewhere in that vast temple. Little big.
It's a little big.
A little
especially
too much.
When, you know, like you're saying, there's not a whole lot of you.
Do you really need that much space on the most dense planet in the galaxy, like population wise. I don't know. Just seems a little
probably
excessive to me.
Some people
probably could help a lot of people out. So they discuss how I spelled that wrong, how arrogant Anakin is, but oh well, there's nothing they can do about Anakin. They're just going to have to let him go with Padme. And then Mace Windu reminds,
can't be helped.
We can't do anything about
simply
this.
Simply no other option.
Just, we cannot switch them at all. Like Obi-Wan can't go with Padme. Anakin's got to go with Padme, the one that we don't trust.
Hands are just completely tied.
We've already said it. We can't go back on our word. Then Mace Windu reminds them of the prophecy of the Chosen One, and he's the only one who can bring balance to the Force. And that's got to be a lot of pressure for Anakin. If they keep reminding him of that, like, hey, by the way,
yeah,
you're going to save us all.
Just like as he's out the door, you know, like, oh, hey, by the way, you're the Chosen One.
They just remind him every time he leaves.
Take care. Hey, have a good one.
You're going to bring balance to the Force, whatever that means. Thanks, bud.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, at Padme's place, Padme appoints Jar Jar as her representative in the Senate, which is a bad move. Mm-hmm. Turns out, Padme is sure to let Anakin know how she hates this idea. And Anakin confesses that he feels like he's actually ahead of Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan is holding him back. And this, there's some obvious resentment there. And then we get these kind of weird exchange lines here. She says, Anakin, don't try to grow up too fast. And then he says, very creepily, I might add, but I am grown up. You said it yourself. And then the audio description says he gives a seductive smile, which I don't think is a seductive smile at all.
I did not pick up the seduction.
More Predator.
Yes, it's creepy. He's so creepy. And I'm like, man, get out of there, Padme. There's so many red flags.
It's like not even like a full smile. It's more like this.
Yeah.
Hey, Padme.
And then, I just hate that it's reinforced that it works. Like eventually, that's like the most disappointing part, right?
100%. 100%. And Padme says, "Please don't look at me like that." And he says, "Why not?" And then she says, "It makes me feel uncomfortable." And he apologizes and then continues to stare her down with a creepy smile as she leaves.
Yeah. Like, how much better would it have been if Anakin just, like, you know, did nice things for Padme?
Or even, like, I love that.
Yeah.
Or even the sense, like, he's almost, like, annoying to her in the sense of, like, not a creepy annoying, but almost, like, he is a little immature and she's, like, I'm a senator and you're supposed to be, I know you're a Jedi, but you're really immature, Anakin. You're getting on my nerves. Like more of that type of thing instead of, oh God, please stop looking at me like that.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Like almost like Anakin's more playful and like dumb, like teenage boy type thing instead of this, which is like creepy murder guy. Oh, well. So we switch to see Padme and Anakin being escorted to their refugee ship because they're being disguised as refugees to Naboo. That's kind of what they're going to be doing. And Padme has a small discussion with Dorme, another handmaiden. And Obi-Wan tells Anakin basically to do nothing at all. Like, don't do anything when you're with her. Just don't do anything, Anakin. And I'm really digging Anakin's look here. It's very Luke. From the cut stuff from A New Hope with the windbreak. Yeah, the poncho thing.
Yeah.
I like it. And after they take off, we cut to Dex's diner. And you got to love Dex, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's named after George Lucas's son. That's fun. That's cool. Like, he's just a cool...
A 1950s diner.
Yeah. It's like Johnny Rockets in space, you know? It's like Johnny Rockets, but you take a rocket to get there.
Do you think Dex has opened up a chain of restaurants called Dex's Diner, or is this just the only one on Coruscant?
I don't think yet. I think at this point, it's still here. I think later he does, but he ends up spreading himself too thin. And they're successful, but the quality suffers after that. You know, it's not the same. It's just not the same as the original one location, you know?
Yeah. We actually, I think we do see Dex's Diner in the Aftermath trilogy, like those rebel kids on Coruscant, like use it as a base or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Anyway, Obi-Wan sits and then immediately stands back up when Dex gets there. Like, literally, it's like he sat for 1 second. And for whatever reason, I hate that. I hate that. I don't know why that bothers me so much. He sits down, stands up immediately.
Yeah.
Why'd you sit down, Obi-Wan?
Well, maybe he didn't see that Dex was coming out, or...
How do you not see Dex coming out? No offense to Dex. How do you not see that?
You know, I mean, he's just off in his thoughts, thinking about that... You know, he's like, oh, I saw somebody in Mandalorian armor trying to kill a senator.
Oh, Dex is here already.
It's like, oh, look, Dex. Yeah, and then...
Now, the droid does say something about Jawa juice, which that also used to bother me because I was like, Tatooine's supposed to be like the furthest place from the center of the galaxy. How is there Jawa juice here? But now that we know from the Mandalorian, there's Jawas everywhere.
Yep, they're spacefaring.
They fixed it.
Yep.
They fixed it. So Obi-Wan shows him the dart. Which, by the way, check those out. Great product.
Use and, code. Don't forget it.
Dex is shocked. He saw them on Sub-Terrell beyond the Outer Rim. Now, I know George was just writing jargon there, but that line bothers me too. Can we just say the unknown regions, or is it out of the galaxy? Is it not even in the galaxy? What is this place?
Yeah, And here it's just like dropped. Was that the?
Well, I guess when he goes to the map, they kind of talk about it a little bit. But Kamino's not even that far out in like the galactic circle, the spinning circle thing. It's right. Like Kamino's just like right in the middle, and everybody just erased the coordinates.
Yeah. Maybe it's it's the unknown regions, as in there's a hole in the middle of the galaxy that's unknown. It's an unknown region because it's not on the map.
If you have the explanation to this, please call into our voicemail hotline. It's in the show notes. 665. I don't know. Is that right? I don't know. Anyways,
I do not have it handy.
259. Something something six. Something. It doesn't matter. Dex explains this comes from cloners, and the funny little cuts on the side give it away. We also find out that Obi-Wan really hates droids with his line, if droids could think, there'd be none of us here, would there?
Yeah.
Seems like a dig at droids to me.
It does. And knowing like what we know about droid sentience, you know,
they can think.
Moral standing.
R2-D2 and C-3PO absolutely think.
Yeah, for sure.
He would have hated L5.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated her.
Yeah.
He probably would have just killed her.
It's about L3? Her.
L3. Did I say, what did I say? L5?
L5. Yeah. But
So then they continue to talk about how Kamino is beyond the Outer Rim, and it makes me so mad. And then Dex once again mentions that they're cloners, and they really keep to themselves, and they love money. And then he laughs and laughs, and that's the end of part one.
Yep, because like we said, it wouldn't even play for us past frame.
It stopped for me. Yeah. So part two will be 33 minutes and 46 seconds to 1 hour, 11 minutes and 16 seconds. So stop right there at 1 hour, 11 minutes and 16 seconds for part two of our Attack the Clones breakdown as we do the Boba Fett rewatch. If you have any questions, you have comments about Attack the Clones, you want to say something and correct us even, like, explain to us how Sub-Terrell and Kamino are beyond the Outer Rim, but not in the unknown regions. Call into our voicemail hotline, and Mac has that for us because I trust that he has that phone number for us pulled up, and it is...
Alex, that phone number is 205-259-6675. One more time.
Yeah.
That's 205-259-6675. 7-5. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. We love hearing from y'all. So just, you know, call in. We'll be doing, you know, voicemail episodes here again shortly. So,
and it doesn't even have to be necessarily Attacker Clones related. If you just want to call in, we can play those a little bit before the next part, like when we start breaking down stuff.
Yeah.
So call in and you could get your question or comment on the podcast. Again, also remember to subscribe on YouTube. We are so close to 1,000.
So close.
So close. And you can help us out by subscribing. You can also help us out by supporting us on patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. Even though we are children of the watch, a Star Wars show now, covering live action television show, because we have jobs right now. So I feel like we covered everything.
I feel like that's it. I don't have anything to add.
Any last thoughts about Attack of the Clones, Jango Fett, what's the layers of getting other bounty hunters and then droids to do your work for you? What, any last thoughts there?
What more could we say that we haven't already said? I don't really think anything.
We covered a wide range of topics in part one of our Attack of the Clones breakdown. We had laughs.
Long too. We went longer than I thought.
We had some laughs. We got serious. We cried.
Yeah.
I mean, all the range of emotions in the first 30 minutes.
I screamed from fright, even. Yeah. So, yeah. What more do you want? The full range. It's all
what
there.
More
the
could whole, you ask for?
The whole human experience in, you know, a quarter of a movie. So, all right. Well, I think that's all I got.
That's all I got. So unless there's huge breaking news before our part two breakdown, we'll see you next time for our Attack of the Clones part two breakdown. Remember, stop at 1 hour, 11 minutes, and 16 seconds. Do not go any further.
Not a frame further. But until then, keep the watch.